All right, let's dive into something pretty fascinating today. We're going to be looking at Patricus v. Gamilla. It's a 1988 case. And you know, it might not ring a bell for everyone right off the bat, but it really did end up shaping how we think about civil rights cases, especially when we get into the world of class actions.
Yeah, for sure. You can't really talk about class actions in constitutional law without at least touching on Patricus. It's like one of those landmark cases that kind of set a lot of the ground rules.
And the story behind this case is, well, it's pretty intense. It starts with a police raid on a gay bar in Chicago back in the 80s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. To really get why this case matters so much legally, I think we need to, you know, kind of set the scene a little bit. So picture this. September 12th, 1985, agents from this group called NEMIG.
NEMIG.
Yeah. The Northeastern Metropolitan Group, which is basically a joint drug task force, you know, multiple agencies all working together. They team up with some Chicago PD officers and conduct a raid on this place called Carol's Speakeasy.
A speakeasy. What is this, like, the Prohibition era?
Right. Sounds like it.
Mm.
It was a gay bar, though, and I guess they used the name to be kind of, you know, under the radar a little bit.
Makes sense. Back then.
Yeah, but this raid wasn't exactly like a quiet little operation. They detained over 50 patrons who were there that night.
50?
Yeah. Some of them were held for like 3 hours, searches, interrogations. They even had their pictures taken, and all of this without any warrants.
That sounds, that raises some serious red flags about their Fourth Amendment rights, you know, the whole protection against unreasonable search and seizure.
Exactly. And the guys who ended up bringing in this lawsuit, Alan Patricus, Richard Babel, and John Doe, they weren't just looking for a payout for themselves. They wanted something much bigger. They wanted to change the system, and they aimed to do it with a class action lawsuit.
So they were going for systemic change, not just individual damages.
Exactly. They wanted the court to declare that what the police did was unconstitutional, and they also wanted an injunction to stop it from ever happening again. But to do all of that as a class action, you know, representing everybody who was at the bar that night, they had this huge legal hurdle in front of them. Rule 23 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure.
Ah, Rule 23, the class action rule.
Right. Basically lays out all the boxes you got to check to bring a case as a class action. The first part, Rule 23A, sets out the four basic requirements, the must-haves, before a court will even consider it.
So what are those four key ingredients?
Well, you got numerosity, commonality, typicality, and adequacy. And if even one of these is missing, well, you're probably not going to get very far with a class action.
Right. So break those down for us. What exactly do each of them mean in a case like Patricus?
Sure. So let's start with numerosity. This basically means the class has to be big enough that it just wouldn't make sense for everyone to file individual lawsuits. It would overwhelm the courts. In Patricus, there were about 50 people at the bar during the raid.
Okay, but 50 people? That doesn't necessarily sound like a massive class.
That's true. And that's where the context becomes really important. The court took a couple of other things into consideration here. First, there's the idea of judicial economy, right? Imagine 50 separate lawsuits, all stemming from the same event. It would be a logistical nightmare for the courts.
Right. A huge waste of resources.
Exactly. But the bigger issue, and this is really where things get interesting, is social stigma. The court understood that in 1985, being openly LGBTQ+ could carry a lot of, well, baggage.
Yeah, sadly, that was a very different time.
So the court recognized that people might be hesitant to file individual lawsuits, even if their rights were violated, because they didn't want to be publicly outed or face discrimination or even violence just for being who they are.
It makes you realize how these legal rules, they're not just abstract concepts, they play out against a backdrop of real-world social pressures.
Exactly, and that's what makes this case so compelling. So we've got numerosity, but we also need commonality. That means everyone in the class has to be asking the same basic legal question based on shared facts.
So in Patricus, what was that common thread?
The raid itself. Everyone was there. Everyone experienced it. The legal challenge wasn't about a bunch of random, unrelated things that happened. It was about one event, one coordinated action by law enforcement. So the common question is, did this raid, as it was carried out, violate the Fourth Amendment? Do they have the right to detain everyone, search them, question them?
So it's about challenging the whole operation, not just individual officers' actions.
Right. And then we come to typicality. This one can be a little trickier, but essentially it means the named plaintiff's claims have to be representative of the whole class.
So in other words, Patricus, Babel, and Doe, their experiences had to reflect what happened to everyone else there.
Exactly. And the defense actually tried to argue against typicality in this case. They said, well, some people might have been searched more aggressively or questioned longer than others. So they're saying that the named plaintiffs can't speak for everyone.
Interesting. So were they successful with that argument?
Not really.
Mm-hmm.
The court said, yeah, there might have been slight differences in how each person was treated, but the bottom line was they were all detained without warrants. That's the core issue, and that applied to everyone. The named plaintiff's experience of being held and searched without any legal justification, that's what the entire class was claiming. Their claims all came from the same incident, the same legal arguments, the same allegations of wrongdoing by the police.
So the court is basically saying that minor variations in the details don't matter as long as the central legal claim and the basic facts are the same for everyone in the class.
Right. You got it. And the last piece of the puzzle in Rule 23A is adequacy. This means that the named plaintiffs have to be capable of representing the class's interests and that their lawyers have to be competent and experienced enough to handle the case effectively. And in Patricus, the court specifically noted that the plaintiffs were represented by the ACLU.
The ACLU, yeah, they're pretty well known for their expertise in civil rights litigation.
Right, so the court was satisfied that there weren't any conflicts of interest among the class members and the lawyers were definitely up to the task. So with numerosity, commonality, typicality, and adequacy all checked off, the court then turned to Rule 23B. This section basically lays out the different situations where a class action is appropriate. What's interesting about Patricus is that the court actually certified the class under two different parts of Rule 23B.
Two different parts? That's not super common, is it?
Not usually, no. But here, it made sense, because the plaintiffs were asking for two distinct types of relief. Remember, they wanted a declaration that the raid was unconstitutional, and they wanted an injunction to prevent this kind of thing from happening again. That's where Rule 23B2 comes in.
So Rule 23B is for when you're trying to stop something from happening again, when you want the court to order someone to change their behavior.
Exactly. And this is really common in civil rights cases, because the goal is often to stop discrimination or other unlawful conduct. So B2 fit perfectly with that part of their claim. But they were also looking for money damages to compensate for the harm they suffered. And for that, you need Rule 23B3.
Right, because money damages are a little different. You might have to figure out how much each person is owed, which could get complicated.
Exactly. But for B3 to apply, the court has to find that the common questions of law and fact are more important than any individual issues, and they have to decide that a class action is the best way to resolve the case.
So even if there are some individual differences in how much money each person might get, the main point is that everyone was subjected to this allegedly illegal raid.
Right. The court said, look, whether the raid was constitutional or not, that's the overriding issue. That's what affects everyone. And it's much more efficient and fair to handle those claims together than to have a bunch of separate lawsuits all asking the same basic questions.
So in the end, Judge Conlon grants their motion for class certification under both B2 and B3. And that's why we're still talking about this case today, right? It really set a precedent for how to think about class actions in these types of situations.
Absolutely. What Patricus shows us is that marginalized groups can use class actions to fight for justice, especially when it comes to systemic problems. Mm. I mean, imagine if everyone who was at that bar had to sue individually.
Some of them might not have even bothered. They might have been too scared, or maybe they just couldn't afford it.
Exactly. And that's where Rule 23 matters. It's not just a bunch of legal technicalities. It can be a powerful tool for social change, especially in cases where individual action is difficult or even dangerous.
Yeah. And the court made it clear that social stigma is a legitimate factor to consider. It's not just about numbers. You have to think about the real-world context, the pressures people are facing. Patricus really opened the door for class actions to address those kinds of situations, situations where people's rights might be violated, but they're afraid to speak up on their own.
And that brings us to a really important takeaway for anyone who's interested in law, especially civil rights law. Patricus v. Gamilla teaches us that Rule 23 can be so much more than just a procedural hurdle. It can be a vital tool for achieving justice on a broader scale. And for law students out there, this case is like a masterclass in how courts try to strike a balance between individual rights and collective action. It's a fascinating study in legal strategy and how to use the rules to bring about meaningful change.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder what other situations might be out there where this kind of approach could be used.
Yeah.
Where people are being harmed, but they're silenced by fear or stigma. It's a question worth pondering, for sure.
It definitely is. Well, on that note, we'll wrap things up here. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Patricus v. Gamilla.
It's been a pleasure.
Until next time.